one time.
The volunteer-made programming you're enjoying on 95.9 FM provides the community with an opportunity to learn and share through radio. From downtown Winnipeg, this is CKUW.
Hello, I'm Kirk Bennett. This is number 0860, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0860. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, we remember DeMond Wilson, who recently passed away, with an interview we did in 2019 talking about his book, Second Banana, The Bittersweet Memories of Sanford and Son. He talked about why the term bittersweet is in the subtitle.
Red and I never had an acrimonious relationship. We never said an unkind word to one another. We never got into an argument. You know, there were times when he would get mad at me because I would goof on him and hit a nerve. But, you know, the bittersweet had to do more with the people that put the show on.
Jennifer Jones was the first black woman who became a Rockette. She's the author of two books, On the Line, My Story of Becoming the First African-American Rockette, and also her memoir, Becoming Spectacular, The Rhythm of Resilience. How was it being the first black Rockette?
I felt comfortable being around, you know, the white women, but it wasn't until I felt the prejudice from some of the people in management or some of the ladies on the line did I get that uncomfortable feeling. And working through knowing that I'm dancing on the same stage as you, wearing the same costume, under the same lights, and I'm living out my childhood dream, and no one is allowed to take that from me.
Mark Hartzman, the curator of WeirdHistorian.com, is back with the weird story for the month of February. This one deals with a guy who killed himself to prove he can communicate from beyond the grave.
The man named Thomas Bradford actually killed himself. He wanted to die to prove that we really never die. This was a time where spiritualism was very popular, that being a belief that we just pass on to another realm and that there's still an ability to have our spirits and to communicate. And so what he wanted to do, he was a student of spiritualism, so he was very much into it. You know, read a lot about the occults. This was a time people were using Ouija boards, going to mediums. As we said, he was really willing to die for that cause.
And there's lots and lots of Stuff File news, dad joke theater, Sir Dudley's Poetry Corner, morning shower thoughts, and of course, an idiot of the day. The guest Slater, the person who told you this was show number 0860, was Kirk Bennett, who is a cinematographer and a director. He's currently working on two films, including Taste Your Freedom, a 25-year project on the homelessness situation in Montreal and those helping to end it. You can check out the website for the film at tasteyourfreedomthefilm.com. Thank you very much, Kirk, for doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stuff File program, a show that is listener-supported, fan-funded radio that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Well, let's get right to the stuff. A flock of wild turkeys has been terrorizing residents in Janesville, Wisconsin, chasing postal workers and children through neighborhood streets. Wow, sounds like the making of a popular movie.
My name is Alfred Hitchcock, and I would like to tell you about my forthcoming lecture. It is about the birds and their age-long relationship with man. And the turkey is traditionally our guest of honor at Thanksgiving.
Lawrence Meyer recorded video of the birds pursuing a mail carrier and said his 8-year-old son was also chased while crossing the street. Said Meyer, "They're as tall as my son. When they fluff their feathers, they're scary." The turkeys blocked traffic and have caused accidents, according to residents. Jason Cotter, a Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources wildlife biologist, said such aggressive behavior is rare. He said these particular birds in Janesville have been seemingly causing a stir with folks getting in and out of cars, mailmen, and children going to school. Wow, this really does sound like a Hitchcock film.
I think they were after the children.
For what purpose?
To kill them.
Officials recommend carrying umbrellas to appear larger. The Wisconsin DNR is consulting with USDA Wildlife Services about relocating the troublesome birds. Well, I'm guessing that people in Janesville, Wisconsin are still drinking wild turkey, though.
Wild turkey. Give them the bird.
Police in Williamsport, Pennsylvania responded on the afternoon of February 2nd to a domestic dispute between siblings who threatened to kill each other over who ate the last sticky bun. Here's the police dispatch audio.
I got a domestic in progress. No weapons, no intoxications. 800 Rural Ave, 800 Rural Ave. It is between siblings over who ate the last sticky bun. Now they're threatening to kill each other.
Again, I repeat, over sticky buns. The Williamsport Bureau of Police denied public records requests, so details about the siblings' ages, identities, or potential arrests remain unavailable. The sticky bun's origin is also unknown, though they may have come from local favorite Mr. Sticky's, which offers cinnamon buns, quote, topped with our special and delectable cream cheese icing, unquote. The bakery sits a short drive from where the confrontation occurred, suggesting the treats were worth it. I guess the best way to describe the confrontation is siblings potentially fighting to the death over sticky buns because one of them got sticky fingers. And finally in this section of Stuff File News, it's all about the Olympics! The World Anti-Doping Agency, or WADA, is examining allegations that ski jumpers inject hyaluronic acid into their penises to gain competitive advantages. At this point, you're probably confused. I know initially I was. Reports stated that athletes may use such injections or place clay in underwear to temporarily enlarge measurements during suit fittings. Suits are measured using 3D scanners from the lowest genital point, and larger measurements result in looser suits that improve aerodynamics. WADA President Witold Banka promises to investigate the claims, dubbed Penisgate. The allegations follow recent suspensions of Norwegian Olympic medalists Marius Lindvik and Johan Andre Forfang for illegally adjusting suit seams. Doctors say such injections are possible, but very risky. WADA Director General Olivier Nigli said the agency would examine anything doping-related if evidence surfaces. What I want to know is, how do you broach the subject initially with world-class ski jumpers that injecting hyaluronic acid into their penis is a good idea before measuring them for suits? I mean, who's the first person who said, yeah, I'm up for that? Anyway, let's get to our first segment.
This is the Stuff File.
Recently, we lost another television icon. Damond Wilson, best known for his role as Lamont on the 1970s sitcom Sanford and Son, died at the age of 79 due to complications from cancer at his home in Palm Springs on January 30th. We spoke to him 7 years ago when he was promoting his book, Second Banana, The Bittersweet Memoirs of Sanford and Son. Here's part of that conversation now from right after my initial introduction.
Hello there, how are you? You forgot my first book, The New Age Millennium.
The New Age Millennium.
Yes, an expose of symbols, slogans, and hidden agendas. I wrote that 20 years ago. I was one of the forerunners for the conspiracy theorist people, and 80% of the things that I said in the book that were 20 years away are happening today. I've not heard one person call me and say, yo, DeMond, we apologize for calling you a conspiracy theorist. You're absolutely freaking right.
Now, I want to talk a little bit about your book, the Second Banana, and the reason is I want to touch on the subtitle of the book, The Bittersweet Memoirs of Sanford and Son. Why are they bittersweet?
Let me ask you a question. I know judges always say, I don't answer questions, I ask them.
Yes.
Are you married?
No, I'm not.
Were you ever married?
No, I have not been.
Did you ever have a love interest in your life?
Doesn't everyone?
No, I'm asking the questions now. You have to answer them, and I'm going to tell you. If you have had a relationship, even with your mother and father, which I presume you had,
yes.
Was it all sweet?
Oh, gosh, no.
Was it all bitter?
No, it wasn't all bitter.
One could say that it was a bittersweet experience, couldn't one?
One could. Yes, Your Honor.
That's your answer.
And I'm glad you say that because, you know, I've often found it interesting, especially in with entertainment media, that people always want to put their own spin on the relationships of those they watch on television as if those characters or those actors are real families, are real people who spend all their working time with each other. And in reality, they're just working relationships. And you don't spend each and every day with everyone you go to work with in the normal walk of life. So why would one expect that to happen in the entertainment field?
Well, I hope that people don't take that the wrong way, because Red and I never had an acrimonious relationship. We never said an unkind word to one another. We never got into an argument. You know, there were times when he would get mad at me because I would goof on him and hit a nerve. But, you know, the bittersweet had to do more with the people that put the show on. Because, you know, you can't have people say, you know, I watched Sanford and Son and I'm still watching it, and you guys were a great team. Well, you can't act that. If there is no synergy between the protagonists, you have nothing. You have actors standing there. I don't mean any disrespect, but that's why the new Odd Couple on ABC with Ron Glass and myself didn't work, because there was no synergy. He didn't like me, and I had no feelings about him, God rest his soul. But Red and I was a unique situation, that it was a love fest, and that's what people are seeing. What you see on that small screen and with Red Fox and DeMond Wilson, Fred and Lamont, is what our personal relationship was. There was no difference. People would come on the set and they say, dang, are you guys rehearsing? I said, no. Well, you're relating to each other like the characters. I said, because that's who we are.
Well, it's interesting that you bring up the new Odd Couple, because I was just talking to a friend of mine just a few moments ago, a little while ago, earlier, when I said I was going to be talking to you. And we were both on the agreement as we don't understand why that show didn't work, because we thought that was perfect casting. But now you're saying that it was not necessarily that way.
Well, you know, first of all, Penny Marshall, God rest his soul, was an acquaintance of mine. We were at Paramount, same time together. I was doing Odd Couple. She was Laverne and Shirley. I had worked with her ex-husband many years ago on the Family, Robbie Reiner, and Gary Marshall was a friend of mine. And he called me up. He said, DeMond, I want you to know that you and Ron Glass are not my first choice. My first choice was Bill Cosby and Flip Wilson, but Cosby came in my office, put his feet up on the desk, threw his Vegas contract up there, lit a cigar and said, match it. And he said, I can't. Come on, Bill, stop it. So he said, my second choice was you and Ronnie. Now, Ronnie made his television debut on Sanford and Son. And I knew, like myself, that he was from the theater in Minneapolis, the Guthrie Theater. And just before we went on the air, I also knew that he had never done television. So I said, now, Ronnie, this is a live audience out there, and they're carnivores. So, you know, get out there and do it. Do what I know you can. And he held that grudge against me all the way through the end of my show with that. and all the way through Barney Miller. And then one day on the set, he said, you know, I don't like you because of what you said to me backstage when I did Sanford & Son. It frightened the bejesus out of me. And I thought, what? What? You know, so it wasn't the producers. It wasn't the ratings. Ron thought that that show made him look gay. And everybody went, oh, well. The character's not making you look gay because I guess you might have been able to interpret that for Tony Randall, but you sure couldn't interpret that way for Jack Lemmon.
Right.
So, you know, the character didn't make you look gay. I mean, that's how you're coming off, Ron. So he didn't want to work with me. He didn't like me. He was terrified of me. The directors would say, DeMond is going to steal every scene from you. He does it every show, Ron. So, and that would just drive him crazy. He was a nervous Nelly anyway. And they would say that to try and motivate him to get out there and slug it out with me. But he never would. And it was the perfect opportunity for us to take that someplace else. I personally think it was one of my best works that I did on all three, four of the shows that I did. I didn't particularly like Baby I'm Back, the scripts that they were writing. I loved Denise. I knew Denise back. We come from the theater together in New York. But Ronnie just, you know, said, this makes me look gay. And everybody went, oh, well. Don't know how a part could make you look gay. And I did Boys in the Band on Broadway. I've been married 45 years. I have six adult progeny. You can't say adult children. That's an oxymoron, isn't it?
Well, nowadays, there's so much streaming going on. I think it's a kind of a new golden age of television. It's just not necessarily network. Have you looked at
there is no network now. The borders, yeah. The boundaries are there is no, there are no networks anymore. I mean, there's no, you used to have to go to ABC, CBS, and NBC. I did shows on all three of them. And the stuff that I'm doing now, we're gonna put it immediately into syndication. You know, I have a game show that I've written, and we have the contacts. We're putting it right into syndication, you know, and it's going to break all over the place. And then I'm writing a thing that I had in mind for, I wrote it in mind for Halle Berry, but I don't think that she's the physical type for it. Let me say that. She certainly can, she has chops. She can carry her own, but physically she's not, you know, it would be like putting a bantamweight or a light featherweight in the ring with a cruiserweight. You know,
right.
the bantamweight would get his brains knocked out. So the networks are every place now. You got Hulu, Voodoo, Scoodoo, Sleeboo, Boo Boo, Knock News, Snick News. I got all of them. I say my kids came down to the desert last weekend for their mother's birthday and brought us a brand new 60-inch TV. I said, what's wrong with the one we got? They said, Daddy, you know, this one is the technology. I went, oh, yeah. And then they gave me this sound bar, this long thing, the Sonos. And we had Sonos speakers. And now when we watch a movie in the great room, it sounds like I'm in a theater. I go, what the dog goes nuts? What is this?
So besides all the writing you're doing, when will we see DeMond Wilson on the screen again?
Hopefully never. I get offered all kinds of stuff. You know, I'm 72 years young. I look like I'm maybe 50. But I don't have any desire. First of all, I have a very, very illustrious, I've led a very illustrious life. It's not over. But a lot of the things that I'm looking at in the rearview mirror, I'm sure there's things up ahead. Only my creator knows that. But I could not play a role. They could not write a role for me that would be as exciting as the life I've lived. So I'd be doing step-down stuff. And I get offered that all the time. My PR agent, Mark, he said, DeMond, half of this crap, I don't even show you. I said, there was this one guy that was dogging me to play this role of a guy who abandoned his family, not like Ray Ellis. Ray Ellis on my series, he left because they were going to kill him. and his family if he hung around, so that's why he split. But they wanted me to do that deadbeat black guy, which would further perpetuate the image that all black men leave their families and they're no good. I've spent 45 years in a marriage raising 6 kids. And so I said, I'm not going to, well, you know, you'd be acting. I said, I'm not going to do it. And then my friend up in Philly has written a story about the NAACP president back in the 70s in Philadelphia, Moore. And he wanted me to play the Judas goat. And I said, I'm not doing it. The lady at CBS said, why is DeMond an actor? Why doesn't he want to do this? She said, because he's not going to play the Judas goat. I said, ask her if she ever saw Jesus Christ Superstar with Ted Neely. It was a black guy on there named Carl Anderson who married Muhammad Ali's ex-wife, the pretty one. He was a jazz singer, and his mistake that killed his career, he played Judas Iscariot on Broadway and then did the movie. I said, you know, no, I can't do that. I said, why? I said, he's a man of integrity. He's not. Well, I'm not going to do it. And all these roles they're offering me, I got to go MF and GD and F. I'm looking at this new thing that Ernie Hudson, an old friend of mine, is doing on BET, The Family. And they're murdering each other and killing each other. And he sent his daughter to school to become a hitman. And they're all whores. And I can't. The whole thing has changed.
But you're also a writer. So why not write the role that you think DeMond Wilson should play?
I can't. Nobody would believe it. I grew up in Harlem. I was in the theater as a kid. I went to college. I dropped out for a semester to do a play at the Arena Stage Theater in Washington, D.C. This is circa 66. My mother called me, said, I think you need to come home. I got on the bus, went back to Manhattan. There was the letter. Your friends and neighbors have selected you. They shipped my black butt off to Vietnam. I'm a decorated Sergeant E5, U.S. 5161-2294, decorated Vietnam veteran. I come home from Vietnam. I'm walking down the street. Joe Papp sees me, said, I've been looking for you. Where you been? I said, been in the war, fool. He said, come on down to the theater. I got something for you. I went from that to another thing, to a Broadway play, to another Broadway play. Walter Mirisch came to New York, saw me in a play at the New York Shakespeare Theater, and cast me in a Sidney Poitier film. I came to California. I mean, I met my wife. Somebody said, how'd you meet your wife? I said, I opened my wallet. I met my wife and 6 kids. Boop, 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 boop. and then I moved out and left show business. Was tired of it. Didn't want Hollywood anymore. And there was always a call on my life. And I became a minister. I ministered around the world for 18 years in front of huge, huge audiences. People would say to me, don't you miss being in front of an audience? I go, no, I don't, because I do it every other night. I've written 2 books, 3 series. This is my 3rd screenplay. And I am a low-index golfer.
That was a conversation from January 2019, when I spoke to DeMond Wilson as he was promoting his book, Second Banana, The Bittersweet Memoirs of Sanford and Son. DeMond died at the age of 79 due to complications from cancer at his home in Palm Springs on January 30th.
The Stuff File.
And now, Dad Joke Theater.
I know a lot of jokes about retired people, but none of them work.
Join us again for another Stuff File program, Dad Joke Theater.
There's still more guests, more news, and an idiot of the day coming your way on the Stuff File program. Stay tuned. The Stuff File program is a listener-supported, fan-funded radio show that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Sign up and find out about our rewards program. Being a patron doesn't have to be a long-term commitment. There's absolutely no obligation. You could join today and end whenever you'd like. But the time we have your support would be so greatly appreciated. We'd also love to hear your thoughts about the show and even your ideas for rewards. Join us for the ride. Join us at patreon.com/thestufffileprogram.
I'm standing with much love for Canada. Hi, this is Erica M. I love music and supporting Canadian talent. We have world-class musicians, and it feels so good to brag that artist is Canadian. Let's protect Canadian jobs and support Canadian businesses in the arts. Shop as if your country depends on it. Keep your money in Canada for Canada.
You're listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. In the interest of time, kindly hold your applause until the entire program is over.
And still to come in the program, we will talk to the very first Black Rockette ever. Plus, Mark Hartzman, the curator of WeirdHistorian.com, is on to share the weird story for the month of February. We also have Morning Shower Thought, Sir Dudley's Poetry Corner, and, of course, an Idiot of the Day coming your way a little later on. But we've got much more in Stuff File News right here, right now. A woman was arrested after picking up her child from a daycare with a blood alcohol level more than 8 times the legal limit. No, that's the mother, not the child, who had the legal limit. Anyway, 39-year-old Whitney Jensen was arrested for driving under the influence with a passenger under the age of 16 years old, a Class A misdemeanor, and open container drinking alcohol in a vehicle, a Class C misdemeanor. A concerned daycare worker called officers with the Orem Police Department just after 6:20 p.m. on January 22nd. After Jensen arrived to pick up her child while severely impaired, officers arrived at the scene and saw Jensen in the driver's seat with her child improperly restrained. Jensen tried to get out of the vehicle for the interview, but officers said she could not stand up straight without help. They also said she was swaying, was unable to keep her footing, had a slur, was unable to finish her sentences, and smelled of alcohol. Okay, we get it. She was drunk. At the Utah County Jail, she agreed to provide a sample for a chemical test. She had a blood alcohol content of 0.419%, again, more than 8 times the legal limit. It also should be noted that Utah ranks number one in the U.S. for having the lowest and strictest legal limit for drunk driving. Utah's limit is 0.05, while all the other 49 states maintain a 0.08 limit. And you thought Nevada was the driest state. And still with booze in Utah, an archaeological team discovered an intact bottle of alcohol estimated to be 150 years old on U.S. Forest Service land used by Alta Ski Resort. State archaeologist Ian Wright called it a real treasure, noting it's the only known intact bottle from that era found in Utah. The corked bottle, dating to approximately 1870 to 1890, was still full when unearthed. High West Distillery analyzed the contents, with distilling director Isaac Winter taking the first sip. Said Winter, "It didn't smell like gasoline," describing the flavor as fruity with a little bit of leather. Experts determined it's likely a low-alcohol beer and hope to recreate it using yeast from the bottle's sediment. Well, to be honest, isn't everything in Utah low-alcohol? A North Carolina man faces multiple felony charges after breaking into a Little Caesars, making pizzas, and selling them to unsuspecting customers.
Pizza, pizza.
41-year-old Jonathan Hackett, a former employee, entered the Kinston restaurant February the 1st after a major snowstorm dumped 14 inches on the area. Police say he prepared pizzas, sold them, and pocketed all proceeds. Hackett later returned while employees were present, sparking